This is part three of a three-part interview with Lieutenant Randall H. Cunningham, United States Navy. This interview was conducted at the Naval Air Station Miramar, San Diego, California, on 22 March 1974. The interviewer is Captain R.A. Bowling, United States Navy retired, graduate student at San Diego State University.
Would you please continue?
Okay, we just forced the MiG-17 to overshoot us. We were going up in the vertical. We'd slapped the throttle to idle and put out the speed brakes. He flew out in front of us. And we're standing now on the Phantom with the nose straight up in the air, just standing on pure, we're not really flying, we're just standing on pure thrust out of the engines, about 36,000 pounds of thrust. And with a MiG-17 out in front of us, we're behind him, but we're really not in an advantage, because a MiG-17 at those speeds has got about 2.5 to 3 more G's available to him. And when you have that, it means that he can outturn you about 3 to 1. Well, I stood on the rudders. If you touch your ailerons now, you'll depart the airplane and stall it and probably spin it. So you stand on the rudders, just pushed. He was kind of like in a port turn looking down at us. Stood on the rudder, got the airplane to move to his belly side, his blind side where he couldn't see us. Well, he rolled, reversed over the top, started with his right wing down now, looking down at us. And when he did that, he lost the lift off of his own wings. His nose fell through. He made his first mistake. His nose fell through. He tried to get it out. He didn't. He started running. We pushed over, pushed negative G, followed him, put the pepper on him, squeezed the trigger, and the sidewinder hit his tailpipe, and he blew up. Although he didn't blow up like most of the other airplanes, it just knocked a few pieces off his airplane. I started to shoot my last sidewinder because I didn't think it really damaged him. He was still in a right wing down, just like in a long glide, and he wasn't decelerating. He was still accelerating a little bit. And then all of a sudden I noticed a flame come out from under the tail of his airplane, so I didn't shoot the second one. Well, I watched him and I watched him and just kept watching him go down. What we found out later, I can't divulge the source, but we found out later that his controllers had told him to knock it off and that he should be low on fuel this much time. He says, negative, I'm going to kill this guy. So he was talking about Willie and myself. Well, he was running low on fuel. He had to run, and that's what he'd made him another mistake. He'd pushed his airplane beyond its limits. And since the time of Richthofen and Oswald Boca in 1916 wrote his dictas on how to survive and how to kill in the air. Well, he violated one of those dictas. He pushed his airplane just beyond its limits, and that limit was its fuel state, or fuel limit. It cost him his life because he flew it right. It went into about a 30-degree wing down position and flew it right in the ground. So an experienced pilot had just let, I don't know if it was pride or what, be his demise. And it's a mistake I think all of us can learn from. You don't push beyond what the limits of your aircraft or the limits of the guy you're fighting against. Well, we pitched off, and I made a mistake myself by following him down to the ground. And I read in Korea that a lot of the MiG-15s used to fake that they were hit and then pull off and then go in the weeds. Well, I wanted to follow him on down and finish him off if he didn't crash. So when he crashed, I was only about 2,000 feet above the ground, which opened myself into small grounds fire, like a coolie down there with a 30-06 could reach up and shoot us with a rifle, and which they did a lot of our airplanes like that when you fly too low. So I pitched back up, and I looked, and what I hadn't seen was 4 MiG-17s coming in on me. And if they'd have got there just a few seconds earlier, I was sitting there slow, and they were come whizzing by with their guns, I would have been just a setting grape for them. So that's another reason why I'm lucky just standing here talking to you right now. Just very lucky. Well, I had a lot of fuel left. I had about 9,000 pounds of gas left after all of this. This sounds like a long time period, but this whole evolution, the first two kills were within about 4 minutes. And this engagement here lasted about 4 to 5 minutes. And so I had a lot of gas left, looked up, had 4 17s back at my 7 o'clock, and or two of them back at 7, and another one coming in just about at 10 o'clock. So I said, Willie, here comes number 6. pitched up into him like this, and it was my intention to engage him and knock one of the damn things down, when I hadn't seen the other F-4 that was watching this whole thing. It was Matt Connolly, the guy that just bagged two, and he says, "Duke, damn it, you already got three. Look behind you." And let me backtrack. I hadn't seen the four behind me yet. I was turning up into the one at my 10 o'clock, and Matt Connolly said, "Duke, look behind you." And I looked and saw the 417s rendezvousing on me. Well, Matt shot a sparrow, and it looked like it was coming right from my damn airplane. I said, "Matt, Jesus Christ, watch where you're shooting." What I hadn't seen the MiGs yet. The missile went over my tail, and as I looked back, I saw one MiG split up, one MiG split down. It looked like a fleur-de-lis. You know, they just went every direction like a bunch of gnats. And then I realized what he was doing, and I said, "Okay, it's time to get out of here."
How come the missile did not attack you if it went over your top? It hadn't acquired your...
It was a sparrow missile.
Yeah, but
which works on a radar control. He had them locked up, not me. Besides, he just shot it. He didn't actually have he had a CW transmitter, which illuminates him with a radar. He didn't have a lock. He shot the missile bore sight, which means it's just like shooting a rocket.
A beam rider.
But what he did, he turned his nose away, and the missile, he forgot that without a lock that the missile will work. He turned his nose away, which let off the radar illumination off the MiGs, and the missile went right on by him. But it served a purpose that he really wanted, and that was to just make the MiGs break off my tail. Well, they had seen too many of their buddies go down in flames with missiles, and they didn't like it, and they split every direction. So I said, "Willie, we're getting the hell out of here." I said, "I only see one other Phantom in the sky, and I see MiGs all around us." So
this is now where you're going by those earlier dictums that you don't push it.
Yeah, you don't. Well, I don't know what I was thinking about dictums or not. I'm just trying to get my ass out of there safe. That's what it amounted to. So we started heading and pushed over, unloaded, got rid of the MiG-17s, was going out, and I heard a SAM call. And it was like, "This is Redcon on guard, Sam, Nam Dinh." And Nam Dinh is a North Vietnamese town that is brought down a lot of our airplanes. It's just like a Victor Airway. We got Phantoms and airplanes flying back and forth across this area, and they mount a SAM site there, and they knock off once in a while. Well, I was in a port turn at the time, and I thought, Nam Dinh is right at my 1 o'clock. I better take a look. And I just rolled over and picked up the damn thing coming up at us. And just before that, we had good SAM indications, the warning systems, when they had a SAM launched at us. And let me backtrack again before this. We flew up behind two MiG-17s and a MiG-21 that never even knew we were there. I filled the windscreen with a MiG-21 and went right by it. And I couldn't shoot because I was in minimum range, where our missiles won't arm. They do that so they don't blow up and knock us down as well. Well, my point is that if I'd had a gun, if people would let us have a gun in the airplane, I'd probably have three more MiG kills today, but couldn't shoot. When as we were going out, I looked down, saw the SAM, and it's just like an instant. You see a SAM, and you start to break in, you know, out of the flight path of the missile, and it went off. Well, it went off quite a bit below the airplane. I'd actually had SAMs go off closer than that, and it just kind of shook the airplane, like somebody comes up to your car and gives it a big push. Well, I didn't think anything was the matter at the time, and I said, "Okay, Willie." And I looked down, checked all my instruments, they were normal, and started to climb out. All of a sudden, the wing went down, gave a hard pitch, and the airplane rolled inverted. And I, holy, you know, your heart goes right down to your stomach. Here you are over bad guy country. It's like over downtown Los Angeles. It's wall-to-wall village in the Red River Valleys, where we were coming out right down the Red River. And so I righted the airplane, looked down, and my hydraulics, I'd lost PC-1, my primary hydraulic system. PC-2, which controls half of the hydraulic system, was going down. And utility, which controls your ailerons, flaps, and the rest of it, was also going down. Well, when you lose hydraulics in the Phantom, when you lose both PC systems, the nose pitches straight up. The stabilator locks. Well, I'd read or heard in a bar that this guy, Duke Hernandez, had rolled his airplane using rudders alone. Well, I went up to about 23,000 feet, and all of a sudden, the airplane, I looked down, both hydraulics were zero, and it didn't go right yet, but it started kicking the nose over a little bit. And all of a sudden, the nose just went straight up in the air and dug in, put about 6 G's on us, pitched straight up in the air, and my first thought was, Willie, don't eject. Because if he would eject, I think the scaredest I've ever been in my life. Combat, you don't really have time to think about what's getting you. You're very busy. You got too many things to think about. But at that time, I thought that I was going to become a POW. It's probably the most scared moment of my life. And I said, Willie, put the ejection handle in, which meant that he's got a handle back there that selects. He can go out by himself, but if he pulls that handle out and he ejects, I go with him automatically. If he ejected, I didn't want to go. I was going to try and get the airplane back. I looked back. My right wing tip from the outer panel had been blown off. The aircraft was on fire from Willie back. And we were going up through about 27,000 feet. I stood on the right rudder. The stick was like nothing. It didn't have any control on it, except that I could hold it full back and it'd hold the nose just slightly up, or just below the horizon. Well, the nose was almost in the vertical, about 70 degrees nose up. I stood on the right rudder, which caused the airplane to roll over. The nose started coming down. As the nose came down, I went to idle, and I put my speed brakes out, and I thought, I'm going to waste too much utility pressure using speed brakes. That's the only pressure I got left, and it's fluctuating. So I left them where they were for a second. As the nose started coming down through the horizon, just before it came through the horizon, I stood on the left rudder, got the nose, which controls yaw, the yaw axis. It yawed the nose left, yawed the nose up, stood on the left rudder, held the nose up. As soon as the nose came up the horizon, I put the speed brakes in, went back into full burner, and got it into a rolling climb again. Now, the only control I have is rudder. I rolled it 15 miles like that out over the water. We had other Phantoms around us screaming at us to eject, that our airplane was on fire, big pieces of it were coming off. And I'm not saying that I would have rode the airplane to the ground and died rather than become, no. But I was going to wait till the last minute and without the chance of being a POW. It was just like I'd been brought up, and my family was very religious, but I'd gotten away from religion. And I said to myself, I said, God, get me out of this one. And the airplane was rolling okay, and I said, well, he didn't have anything to do with it. And then all of a sudden, the airplane started going berserk. And I said, God, I didn't mean it. Just get me out of this situation. And what was fearful is that they told us that there was one thing that would keep us, if we were taken prisoner of war, would probably keep us together, and that's having a value in the church, having faith. And I didn't have that at the time. And it was, I found out later to be a very important step in my life, from which since I've become a Christian as well. But we got about 1 mile out over the beach, and utility went, the airplane went into a spin. It was like somebody had taken the airplane in his hands, taken us 1 mile out over the beach where it was safe. We're talking 5 seconds different, that would have been a POW. Taking us out to safety and said, here, you got it. The airplane went into a spin. I deployed the chute to try, and I said, Willie, I want to get 1 more mile off, because as we were rotating in this spin, I'd see the land and I'd see the water. I didn't know if I was over the water yet. So I said, Willie, eject, eject, eject. Only I only got out, Willie E, and bang, I heard him, he was gone.
And that's what he said. That's all he heard, was Willie E.
Well, before this, Willie said, Duke, the handle is out, the ejection handle is out, I'll stay with you until you tell me to go. He says, I don't want to be a prisoner of war either. And so we got out of the airplane and coming down, and first thought was that, you know, the wind blows from the ocean side in, that the chutes were going to go out. Well, it didn't work like that. We landed in the water. Some Marine helicopters picked us up.
About how far off the beach at this time?
Right in the mouth of the Red River. As we were coming down, they sent out some PT boats out after us, and a freighter was heading toward us, Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, and some of our own guys in the Phantoms stayed with us, and some A-7s stayed with us at risk of their own. They were still shooting SAMs at them, still shooting AAA, and they were low fuel state, and they stayed right with us to make sure that the PT boats, the A-7s rolled in and took care of the PT boats for us. They impeded their progress. And they launched the carrier, launched off some airplanes as rest cap. And that's one great thing. You know, once you're hit, that they'll stop a whole war for you to try and get you out. This includes Air Force, Marine Corps, Navy. They'll call off strikes, important strikes, and they'll protect you as much. And you know they'll do everything they can to get you out. And those guys risked their own lives to stay with us. The choppers picked us up out of there, and it's a funny little anecdote. On our trip back here in the States, our PAO trip that Willie and I had, there was a guy in Boston that asked Willie, he said, Willie, he says, there you were, hanging in a chute, and the Boston press is a little leftist-oriented, and the guy was a little antagonistic, and he said, he used these words, he says, there you were, hanging in your chute, you had just butchered three North Vietnamese pilots, and the people had retaliated against you, shot you down in your F-4, they sent PT boats out after you, you thought you were going to be a prisoner of war, you were coming down fast, possibly over enemy territory, what thoughts were going through your mind? And Willie, being quick-witted, came back and says, well, perhaps I thought perhaps I'd made an incorrect decision leaving the Army Reserves back in Boston at the time. So it kind of put the guy down. But we got back aboard, we were taken to a hospital ship, and I was hurting the ejection. We got on the hospital ship, and the first thing was we wanted our MIGs confirmed, and we wanted to get back to our own ship because they had more strikes going out the next day, and we didn't want to miss out on them. And so they took us back aboard the ship, and my back was injured, and they had me in a stretcher, and I said, I'm not going back aboard my own ship in a stretcher, so I walked. It's quite a bit of pain. And they'd stopped all operations. They'd heard that we became the first aces in Southeast Asia at the time. And here comes little Willie White again, that little colored boy up there, and he hit, these guys had tears in their eyes, the troopers. And this little colored boy walked up to me and said, Mr. Cunningham, we heard you made ace today. And he says, that's really great. He says, we heard you shot down three MIGs, and that's your hero and all that. He says, but the other men asked me to say that that's not really important. We're just glad to have you back alive. And to Willie and I, that's probably the most important thing that happened all day. Not becoming aces, but just getting back alive. Because I'd have very little credibility in the Hanoi Hilton, especially with the special treatment that we would have received. I came back and talked to some of the POWs, and they had seen wanted posters on Willie and myself, that if we were ever shot down, it'd be shipped directly to Hanoi for special treatment. It'd be used politically.
What do you mean by special treatment?
Well, not to have been hurt. That part of it would have been probably good for us, that we did lose a lot of the villagers would, I guess, kill a lot of our pilots when they went down instead of taking them into Hanoi or so on like that, that we were not to be harmed, that we were to be shipped to Hanoi directly without any time so they could exploit us politically. And this whole evolution, I know President Nixon has been criticized, like when he mined the harbors. He's gone under criticism for the dikes and the rest of it, protective reaction strikes. But I still stand behind the gen in this fact that I don't agree with some of his other policies, but he kept a lot of us from becoming prisoners of war. We used to fly over Russian and Chinese ships coming into Haiphong Harbor just loaded with surface-to-air missiles, tanks on their decks, MIG crates, and we couldn't touch them. Well, when he mined the harbors in May, those ships were held up out there. And when we bombed Haiphong Harbor, we had over 300 SAMs, surface-to-air missiles, fired at the flights. Now, to us, this meant a high kill probability for them. After the harbor was mined, we struck the same harbors, and we maybe got five or six SAMs shot at us. So you could really see the difference in it. And the man knew that he was right, and he saved a lot of us, saved not only our lives, but spending some time in the Hanoi Hilton eating pumpkin soup. The protective reaction strikes, they're things that we had to do. It meant survival at the time.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Cunningham, for your story and the time you have taken to record it for history. Thank you very much.